Today, scientists say there are about 200 billion trillion stars in the observable universe and 2 trillion planets. When the Pew Research Center asked Americans, "Do you believe that we are alone in the universe?" About two-thirds, or 65%, said no. They believe that intelligent life exists on other planets. And amazingly, 76% of adults under age 30 agreed with them. Polls also showed that 41% of Americans believe UFOs, popularly known as unidentified flying objects, are evidence that alien life from other planets has come to Earth. Moreover, 16% of people claimed firsthand sightings of UFOs. Even Congress and high-profile Pentagon officials are interested in UFOs. In 2022, they officially broadened the name of UFOs to UAPs, or Unidentified Anomalous Phenomena, so they could document unidentified craft maneuvering between air, space, or through the sea. As followers of Christ, how do we make sense of millions of reports of UFO phenomena from around the world? Does the potential presence of extraterrestrial life and reports of alien abductions of people challenge the foundations of biblical teaching? Or might UFO phenomenon serve as one of the most compelling present-day proofs that a biblical understanding of reality is indeed accurate? This series is about UFO and alien abductions. My guest is astronomer and astrophysicist Dr. Hugh Ross, who obtained his Bachelor of Science degree in physics from the University of British Columbia, his PhD in astronomy from the University of Toronto, and for 5 years did postdoctoral research at Caltech on quasars and galaxies. Join us for this special series you will see only on The John Ankerberg Show. Welcome to our program. I'm John Ankerberg. My honored guest today is astrophysicist and astronomer Dr. Hugh Ross. And we're going to talk about something fascinating, and that is Alan Hynek actually made a chart of the UFO sightings that people around the world were having. And they're called the close encounters of the first kind, second kind, third kind, and then other astronomers and physicists have done fourth and fifth. And I want to have Hugh take us through what people have seen and why Alan Hynek made these categories, which basically all of the researchers that are working on UFOs are using. And so today, Hugh, let's start with number one. Alan Hynek, first of all, who was he?
He was an astronomer, and he was appointed by our government to head up Project Blue Book. This is back in the 1960s, the same time when I started studying UFOs. And what he recognized is that some people had very disturbing encounters with UFOs, but these were people that were having close encounters with the UFOs. So given the disturbing stories he was hearing, the trauma they were going through, he said, let's actually look at these close encounters, and came up with a classification system. The first one being where the human contactee is within 500 feet or less of the UFO phenomena.
And even before we get into 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, he also talked about when these sites happened. For example, it seems like there was phenomena observed at night, particularly unconventional lights. Then you had the daylight disks. For some reason, phenomena, namely flying saucers, seemed to show up during daylight, and people actually took pictures of some of these saucers.
That's a few of the phenomena. What Alan and others pointed out, though, is that the vast majority of these UFO close encounters happen at about 2 or 3 a.m. in the morning on lonely country roads. And as an astronomer, that got him quite curious, because who hangs out at lonely country roads at 2 and 3 a.m. in the morning? It's we astronomers.
Right.
And yet astronomers have a very low incidence of experience with UFOs. And so he says, there's something going on here that is unusual. This being the case, astronomers should have the highest degree of sightings. They got one of the lowest. So this is why he was actually saying, we need to dig deeper into what's happening with these close encounters.
Yeah, and let's tell a story right here, because we're actually getting to the point of telling the folks that UFO phenomena is associated with the occult. And here you are spending 1,500 hours a year on a telescope, and you have two friends that are coming out that only spend 3 hours looking through the telescope, and yet they saw UFOs. You spent 1,500 hours that year, and you didn't see any. What was the difference?
The difference was that we were not involved in the occult. These other two astronomers were heavily involved in the occult, very heavily involved. And then what happened years later is that Jacques Vallée and other physicists who were studying the UFO phenomena basically said, we look at these close encounters with UFOs, we're seeing a one-to-one correspondence with what people refer to as demonology phenomena. So this is when they began to say, hey, we're not only dealing with interdimensional beings, we're dealing with beings that seem to be similar to what people refer to as fallen angels or demons. It also explains what Alan Hynek was discovering. When people have these close encounters, there is trauma always associated with the encounter. The best case scenario, they have recurring terrifying nightmares.
Yeah, we're going to get into that as we go through the list. And this will show the people what we're talking about. And I'd also like to say this is a list that was not made up by Christians.
Right.
This was made up by scientists, and it coincides with biblical data. And that's what we want to talk about. But let's go back to what the scientists said in terms of sightings that were radar visual. And radar visual or not visual meant that if you were flying in a plane and a UFO showed up next to you, sometimes you would see the UFO on the radar with your plane flying on the radar. But sometimes you would not see it.
Yeah, this is part of the debate. Are we dealing with something that's physical and real or non-physical and real? And what they discovered in these close encounters, particularly with Air Force pilots and Navy pilots, is that they would see the UFO and the radar would pick it up, but the camera wouldn't. Or the camera would pick it up, the radar wouldn't. Or both the camera and the radar would pick it up, but the pilot would lose visual contact. And it's like we're really dealing with a physical object that's subject to the laws of physics. It should be picked up in all the detection devices. It sometimes is picked up by two or three. The latest releases from the U.S. government are saying we actually have evidence that it's picked up by more than one device at more than one wavelength. But the problem is it's still the case that it's not consistent where the human observer sees it and all the detectors see it as well, and it's consistent. There is an inconsistency, which again gives further confirmation we're dealing with something real, but it's not physical. If it was physical, we would get a consistent detection across all the device platforms.
All right, so let's go to his list of close encounters. And everybody's heard the words, I think, close encounters of the first kind.
Right.
His definition was the UFO is sighted at close range within 500 feet of the observer, but it does not affect or interact with the witness or
right.
the environment.
Right.
So how did he come up with this first?
Well, that's just simply a detection. And what he did notice is even with close encounters of the first kind, sometimes there is accompanying trauma. But more trauma with close encounters of the second kind, which is where you're within 500 feet, but there's actually physical effects observed by the human contactee. This is where you have, say, a crash site, where they see a shallow crater or melted snow, or they notice that their animals are disturbed by the phenomena. A dog will start barking, and the dog begins to experience trauma, or a cow. So that's a close encounter of the second kind.
Yeah, let me read the official definition here. The second kind, the UFO leaves physical effects right. on the environment. And he's got down here depressed or scorched ground,
right.
broken tree limbs, signs of radiation that may even cause power failures. Your automobile engine might stall. Your radio in the car might stop playing.
Right.
All of those things happen with the second kind of close encounters.
True, but no physical debris or artifacts. And then the close encounter, the third kind, is where the human contactee sees what he thinks or she thinks is a physical UFO being, some kind of being. They see some kind of image where they think they're dealing with a real personality.
Yeah, it's kind of a hairy definition for a non-Christian scientist to give. Let me read it for you. The living occupants of the craft are seen by witnesses. However, no communication or further contact takes place. They just see them. This kind of encounter almost always happens at night, and usually with only one or two observers. But here you see a craft and you see people in that craft.
Right. And usually we're talking a lot closer than 500 feet.
What is it that they see?
Well, they see some kind of image that looks like some kind of body. And so they're assuming, hey, this has to be a real UFO being. But they never get to a point where they can actually touch the creature. So they're seeing something at fairly close range that looks like a real, they see movement, and it's always bipedal. This is where you get the image of the big head with the big eyes. So they're seeing something, and they're convinced that what they're seeing is an actual UFO being.
Yeah. Is that image the one that's usually seen all over the world?
Yeah. And if you go to Roswell, New Mexico, you'll see cardboard cutouts all over the town. So
the fourth one is getting tougher.
Yes.
As you go down this list, and again, it was made by non-Christians, they're just reporting what happens. Close encounters of the fourth kind means there's been direct contact that occurs between alien beings and the witness. Apparently, taken aboard a spacecraft, the abducted witness interacts extensively with the spacecraft's occupants.
Yes.
Now that's pretty dramatic.
Well, that, and then there's cases where there's communication. The fourth kind is where there's actual communication going on between these UFO creatures and the human contactee. Sometimes what happens, the human contactee goes into a trance and they even wind up typing things out. They get a message. And so there's actual books that are the product of communication between the UFO beings and the human contactees. And as you mentioned, there's the abductions where the human contactee believes that they've been taken on board a UFO spacecraft. They talk about how they've been sexually assaulted. So they claim they've actually had some kind of contact with these beings.
Yeah, I think the most famous book that has been given is Urantia.
Right.
Tell me about that book. How long is it?
It's a big, thick book. I mean, the editions run from 1,000 pages to 4,000 pages, so it's a big, thick book that was entirely communicated, apparently, or the claim is, entirely communicated from UFO beings to human contactees. That book is the basis for a number of UFO religions here in America and around the world. But what's interesting is about a third of its total content is denying the deity of Jesus Christ.
Yeah, let's say that one again. It is basically cutting down or criticizing Jesus Christ over and over and over. 53% of the book is criticism of Jesus Christ. No other gods, no other holy people, just Jesus.
Yeah, the whole focus is on trying to discredit the Christian faith.
Why Jesus?
Well, that's a good question. I mean, why do the other religions get a free skate? Why the whole focus? It kind of reminds me of a debate I did at Caltech at the International Skeptic Society. For an entire weekend, atheist speakers were saying, here's the evidence against the existence of God, but the only God they focused on was a God of the Bible. And I remember talking to them later and saying, look, if you really believed that the God of the Bible didn't exist, you'd be treating him like the Easter Bunny. But your passion, your focus tells me you really do believe that he exists, you just don't like him. And the response was interesting. They're saying, it's not that we hate the God of the Bible, it's that we despise his followers. So clearly there's more going on than just the physical evidence.
Carl Sagan's class, correct?
I took a course from Carl Sagan for a week at the University of Toronto, and he talked about UFOs, and he was insisting there was no evidence behind it at all. UFOs were a total myth, nothing real. But his worldview did not tolerate the existence of non-physical reality. He was a materialist, at least he was at that time. So that's why he just dismissed the UFO phenomena. But as a fairly young Christian, I said, wait a minute, the Bible talks about non-physical reality. So I wasn't willing to dismiss it like Carl Sagan was. And of course, I was much more familiar with the evidence that we actually are dealing with something that's real. Not physical, but real. And not being a materialist, I said, hey, this does have credibility.
Yeah, and I find that interesting that a fellow that did not believe in God said that it was one-to-one with demonic activity.
Well, it wasn't Carl. What was happening was all these other physicists who weren't Christians. I mean, Jacques Vallée is an agnostic, and others who are atheists have written on this phenomena. They say, look, we don't like what we're seeing, but it really does look like what's going on in the UFO phenomena. Again, we're talking the ones that can't be explained, has a very similarity to what we see in demonology and the occult. So they identified the occult and demonology as corresponding to what they see in UFO phenomena. You know, what they were noticing was that the human contactees, the close encounters, they never had a good experience. This was something that was deleterious. Again, the best case scenario, they had recurring terrifying nightmares. Worst case scenario, a close encounter of the fifth kind, where they suffer physical injury. There's even been cases where there's been death.
Yeah, we're going to get to that. But I mean, I just looked at the internet last night, and under his name, with his pages, that phrase next to the demonic, it shows up in his writing. And I thought, that's exactly the opposite of what he taught most of his life.
Well, when he was dying cancer, he did begin to realize, hey, maybe there's more going on here. I mean, a friend of mine, Dave Rogstad, a physicist at Caltech, actually was in communication with him during the last year of his life. So my encounter was a decade earlier than that.
Right. All right, let's get to this fifth one, because this is really something. You go 1, 2, 3, 4, those are the encounters that most of the people have. But then the fifth one, close encounters of the fifth kind, the observer suffers permanent physical injuries or even death.
Correct. Yeah.
Now, that is as drastic as you can make it. Now,
right.
What kind of physical injuries are we talking about?
Well, I mean, it's kind of similar to what happens when you get struck by lightning. I mean, your arm might be injured to where it's no longer usable, or people get killed. And sometimes it's not just the human contactee, but they're animals. And so their dog or their cat or their cow gets injured or killed as a result of the phenomena. What is interesting is you go from close encounters of the first kind to second, third, fourth, and fifth. The numbers get smaller, but also the connection with the occult becomes more dramatic. And so it's only people who are very heavily involved in the occult or demon phenomena that experience the close encounters of the third, fourth, and fifth kind.
This also opens the door to people saying, well, if this is happening, if I am a Christian, can this happen to me? And the answer would be no.
Well, it can if you've got relatives that are deeply involved in the occult.
Yeah, let's tune this up a little bit here. The fact is, first of all, if you're a Christian and you're living for the Lord, you've got protection.
Well, but demons can only attack if you give them permission. You give them permission by trying to seek occult powers.
You open the door
into your life. You open the door when you try to seek occult powers. Rarely, sometimes, a close relative, like a father or a grandfather, might be deeply involved in the occult, and the demons can work through the generations, which is why it's important for Christians not only to confess their involvement in the occult, but to confess the involvement of the occult of their close relatives as something that God doesn't approve.
Yeah.
If you do that, that cuts the link.
Yeah. We've only got a few minutes left, but I think this is very important. We said, if you open the door to the occult, what are some of the ways that are rampant here in America and around the world where people are opening the door and they don't realize that they might be in trouble here?
This is typical of Americans. They're dabbling in the occult and have no idea that they're dabbling in the occult.
Doing what?
Things like astrology, having a Ouija board, getting involved in a seance, or going to a fortune teller, trying to get some kind of information or power. Anytime you're trying to seek supernatural power information, the demons will take advantage of that, and you're actually giving them permission to invade your life. But it also means if you close the doors of the occult, repent of that as something that's displeasing to God, then that takes away the permission. So I've had people who've been having these UFO encounters, they get rid of the occult in their life. That's the end of their UFO experiences, the residual UFOs.
Yeah. Don't get involved in that.
Right.
You're
right.
Opening the door of your life to those kinds of occurrences that the demonic come into.
Yeah. The Bible is clear that when we humans die, we become spectators. We cannot be involved in the affairs of people who are alive here on earth. So if you're getting a visit from someone who's, quote, dead, you're not talking to a dead human being. You're talking to an angelic being.
Right. All right, folks, next week we're going to talk about a very interesting topic that Hugh was one of the physicists, astronomers, astrophysicists, if you want, that was invited to come to the Soviet Union to speak to their physicists. This was during Perestroika. This was the time of Gorbachev. This is when the Russians actually let their physicists go to conventions all around the world. And this raised a lot of questions. And so they wanted to have a conference where they would appease their own physicists. And so they asked experts to come to the Soviet Union to examine their UFO phenomena and talk and answer questions about it, or about God and science. And Hugh was one of the physicist at Caltech, and he was picked with like four or five others, so he's like five, six of the guys, and they were asked, and all the expenses were paid to go to the Soviet Union, so he went, and he had to deliver 30 different speeches, and the people could choose what they wanted him to speak on. We're going to talk about what happened when Hugh took this trip to the Soviet Union and talked to a room full of physical scientists. You won't want to miss that. But stay tuned, because I got a personal word for you in just a minute.